ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय अन्तर्हितेन्द्रिया अर्थाय हरये विहितञ्जलि
सर्वा
भूतात्मय विश्वम् ससर्जेदम् सपूर्ववत् पूर्ववत् अन्तर्हितेन्द्रियार्थाय हरये विहितञ्जलि सर्वभूतमय विश्वम् ससर्जेदं सपूर्ववत् अन्तर्हितेन्द्रियार्थाय विहितञ्जलि सर्वभूतमय विश्वम् ससर्जेदं सपूर्ववत् अन्तर्हितेन्द्रियार्थाय हरये विहितञ्जलि सर्वभूतमय विश्वम् ससर्जेदं सपूर्ववत् अन्तर्हिता On the disappearance, indriya arthaya, under the personality of Godhead, the objective of all senses, haraye, unto the Lord, vihita anjali, enfolded hands. Sarvabhuta, all living entities, Maya, full of, Vishvam, the universe, Sasarja, created, Idam, this, Saha, he, Ramaji, Puravavata, exactly like before. On the disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who is the object of transcendental enjoyment for the senses of devotees, Ramaji, with folded hands, began to recreate the universe, full with living entities, as it was previously. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is the object for fulfilling the senses of all living entities. Illusion by the glaring reflection of the external energy, the living entities worship the senses instead of engaging them properly in fulfilling the desires of the Supreme. In the Hari Bhakti Shuddha Doya, there is the following verse. Akshano phalam tvadrisha darshanam hi, tano phalam tvadrisha gatra sangha, jiva phalam tvadrisha kirtanam hi, Sudur labha bhagavata hi loke. O devotee of the Lord, the purpose of the visual sense is fulfilled simply by seeing you, and to touch your body is the fulfillment of bodily touch. The tongue is meant for glorifying your qualities, because in this world, a pure devotee of the Lord is very difficult to find. Originally, the senses of the living entity were awarded for this purpose, namely to engage them in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, or that of his devotees. But the conditioned souls, illusioned by the material energy, became captivated by sense enjoyment. Therefore, the whole process of God consciousness is meant to rectify the constitutional activities of the senses, and to re-engage them in the direct service of the Lord. Lord Brahma thus engaged his senses in the Lord by recreating the conditioned living entities to act in the recreated universe. This material universe is thus created and annihilated by the will of the Lord. It is created to give the conditioned soul a chance to act, to return home, back to Godhead, and servants like Brahmaji, Naradaji, Vyasaji, and their company become busy with the same purpose of the Lord, to reclaim the conditioned souls from the field of sense gratification and return them to the normal stage of engaging the senses in service to the Lord. Instead of doing so, in other words, converting the actions of the senses, the impersonalists began to make the conditioned souls senseless. And the Lord also senseless. This is proper treatment for the conditioned souls. This is improper treatment for the conditioned souls. The diseased condition of the senses may be treated by curing the defect, but not uprooting the senses altogether. When there is some disease in the eyes may be cured to see properly. Plucking out the eyes is no treatment. Similarly, the whole material disease is based on the process of sense gratification. And liberation from the disease condition is re-engagement of the senses to see the beauty of the Lord, hear His glories, and act on His account. Thus, Brahmaji created the universal activities again. So here, the point being made is that this Indriya Artaya, under the personality of Godhead, objective of all the senses. So the object is when you have someone who is performing an action, that action then will fall upon something else. That will be the objective. So here, the objective will be the senses are engaged in the Lord's service. So He is the object of the senses. That will give a result or some kind of enjoyment. That result is then for Krishna's pleasure. Right? So here the mistake will be that we think that this interacting with the senses of the Lord is for our pleasure instead of the Lord. So because of that illusion, then the yoga maya changes to mahamaya. Because yoga maya will not allow us to bother the Lord. Right? That's maya's business, is that if you're not qualified, don't disturb the Lord. If you're qualified, then okay. So the whole process is engaging the senses in the Lord's service. Now Prabhupada points out here that in doing this is a very important thing to avoid, and that is dropping out the senses altogether. And that's pretty standard, because the impersonalists, which we can generally take as a standard for spiritual upliftment, that's exactly what they do. The senses are a problem, drop out the senses, and then everything's fine. But actually, no, it's a matter of engaging the senses in the Lord's service. We see the Lord, He looks very nice, the incense is very nice, the prasadam is very nice, the interaction with the devotees is very nice. So you've replaced the mundane engagement of the senses with the spiritual. That's important, because I can remember, I mean, actually, basically, most places you go, but some places, you go when devotees take prasadam in a group, it's always, you know, the angle is austerity. Not to enjoy the senses, not to absorb yourself. You know, so I see it's very dry, cut and dry, as quick as possible, as efficient as possible, but the element of interaction and the senses being engaged in the Lord's service doesn't come into it. Spiritual here means the senses are restricted, and so therefore it is better than unrestricted, which is true. But what we're being offered is the ability to get into the spiritual world rather than just to get out of the material world. Does that make sense? We focus so much on getting out, that's nice, but you always have to remember that getting out means we're trying to get into somewhere else. Right? Otherwise, then you'll be out, and then you're out on the street. Right? So the idea is that you go from one shelter to another. This shelter is fallible. It's not real. Where we try to put the senses, where we try to put the emotions and feelings are not real. So we're trying to replace that with the transcendental. Right? But that doesn't mean senses aren't restricted. That is there because we are not able to discern between the spiritual and material. Right? So as long as we're engaging the senses on the material platform, we will not be aware of the spiritual. So the senses are restricted. But the actual purpose is to engage the senses in the service of the Lord. That's the process, because that's what they do in the spiritual world. We don't have impersonalists in the spiritual world. It's a mundane conception. Impersonalism is not there outside the outside the Viraja. It doesn't exist. Right? It's a mundane concept. So there everything's personal, everything has senses, and everything interacts with the Lord's senses. So then it becomes very good. Another point being made here, I think is interesting. Thus Brahma created the universal activities again, the thing Purva Vaka, exactly at like before. This is also, to me, a very important point, because I regularly hear this, that somehow or another today, 2006, there was something unique and special and different than any other time in history. Right? But here, Purva Vaka, Brahma recreated the universe exactly the way it was before the last disillusion. Exactly the same. Some little variety here and there. Maybe the dogs are purple instead of, brown. But whatever, it's still a dog, it still barks. So this idea that I am so special and I am so unique that the Shastra, let alone the world, is actually, can keep up. That I'm so different, I'm such a special category, that the scriptures don't apply to me, is very great egoism. Right? Very great. It's just a matter of applying it. You take an American car, take it to Europe, give it to a mechanic, they can fix it. Right? You may have to get a little bit different wrenches than that. Instead of it being in millimeters, it's in inches. Okay, the wrenches are different. Is that a difference in mechanics? Are you going to say that the principles of which the mechanic in Europe works on his car and the mechanics of, how they work in America are different principles? No, it's exactly the same. The only difference will be maybe in the size of the wrench or where the nut is. Instead of being on this side, it's on that side. But the false ego of the living entity is so great that he thinks that is all in all, because that difference between the inches and the millimeters is my false identity. But in reality, how I function is exactly the same anywhere. You go to anyone in any culture, from the aboriginal cultures of the world up to the so-called most sophisticated, and you talk to the men about their experience in family life. Or you talk to the women about their experience in family life. And they'll be saying exactly the same thing. The detail will be a little different, but the feelings, the experiences, the emotions, exactly the same. But we're so proud, we think it's different. But it's not different. Same old thing. Exactly the same old thing. I was discussing with someone the other day about Rome. So we're talking 2,000 years ago. The things that were going on then are exactly what goes on now. Exactly. Just in those days, people had a little bit more, like personal commitment and those kind of things. They would take responsibility for their own activities. And so, yes, it is different now. They do the same activities, they just don't take responsibility. That's so, you can't say that's a major change, but you might also not. So what's important to bring out is that whatever the situation, we can always engage in the Lord's service. The senses can always be engaged in the Lord's service. And it doesn't matter what time, place, circumstance. the detail may change. Yes, that's guaranteed. But the principle of it connecting to the Lord, that does not change. It can't change. Right? Krishna gave the whole Bhagavatam in four verses, and he says it doesn't change. Right? He's established it this way. So then it will work. So if we have that understanding that Krishna is, we want to engage the senses, but they should be engaged towards him, not towards us. Right? This is the thing. We want to be the karta, or the doer. This is how impersonalism comes in. We want to be the doer. Right? So that's the karta, or the subjective. Then we will do something, right? That's your verb, and that will fall onto the objective, right? Which your activity is being directed towards. And what is being directed towards, through that you'll get your result, right? So who you're directing it at will get a experience. That will be, right? So now we want to be the subject, we want to be the object, and the result is ours. So it's actually, we're only interacting with one person, and that's ourself. We make a great show that we're interacting with others, but actually we're not. Because if we're acting with others, we act that we're trying to please their senses. Right? Then you have two. But we want to do the activity, and we want the enjoyment of that activity to be ours. Right? So then it's a problem. Because it's supposed to be Krishna is the controller. Krishna is the enjoyer. And we're trying to please him. Does that make sense? Then you have two. But otherwise, if it's just we're engaging our senses for our satisfaction, where's the two? We conveniently use other things and people to get our reaction, the results. But actually, you have to think, is it really personal? If it was, I think Prabhupada's mantra would not have nirvi se shunyavadi included in it. Right? It has something else. Does this make sense? Yeah, it makes sense. Right? Yeah.
Purva also refers to Vedas.
Purva Bhakti also refers to Vedas. Oh, okay.
That's the first point.
Okay, here he's been pointed out that Purvavat also means according to the Veda. So then, that's also important that Brahma tells the sages that the Lord creates the Shastra and then he creates according to the Shastra. Right? And then Brahma also then, because he's only doing secondary creation, he creates according to the Shastra. Like that. So that's what's interesting is that Krishna writes the Shastra and then follows it. You know? So in other words, the Shastra is what Krishna likes, what he likes to do. Right? Means we don't know what he likes, so he has it written down. And then following that, then it works, because that's what he does. Right? He comes, he says in the Gita, I don't have to follow anything. But he follows all the rules and regulations, and others will follow him. Right? If he didn't follow, no one would follow. So, since he's going to follow something, he follows something he likes. Therefore, what's written in the scriptures, how he likes it. Right? Isn't that? It's like if you have to play a game, you play the game, you're in control, you play the game the way you want. And you make the rules the way you want. Right? Isn't it? That's how, you know. Yes. Also interesting, just in the previous, is that Krishna tells Brahma if he follows these four, he applies these four verses, the Chaturshloki in his life, then he will not become overwhelmed with pride in either the partial or complete destruction. Interesting is that connecting the two is pride and destruction because they both come out of ignorance. Right? Destruction is the influence of the mode of influence of the mode of ignorance, and pride is also from the mode of ignorance. So there's an element that, if we look at it, much of the time our pride is in the destruction of someone else's. Right? Our pride and I'm better means everybody else is less. Right? Because generally you see if someone wants to establish their authority, they don't do it on their own, they do it by pointing out how others are less. Right? I'm where I am, but everybody else is actually lower, rather than, you know, pointing out one's own qualities and trying to lift it from there. Does that make sense? So when we hear of others having difficulty, then a pride comes up. Because I don't do that, I don't have that problem. So it's important to note that this is because of ignorance. So it's not a great thing. Being able to fault find, that's why fault finding is considered the worst of all the anarthas, because it's based on ignorance and pride. And that's exactly what, after extracting Brahma, then Krishna tells him that if you follow this, these Krishna conscious essential points, you won't be overwhelmed by this ignorance. You won't have this pride due to that you're still left when everybody else is destroyed. Right. Any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
In the beginning, it seemed like that it was the first time Brahma found himself on the lotus in the dark universe. But he seems like the end of his night and a new day. Does that mean that every day Lord Brahma has to recreate and he will find himself in darkness? Huh. I don't understand.
You're here? Question is that it would appear, I mean, in the beginning it was, you know, felt that it was obvious that this is the beginning of creation of the whole universe, but then at the end here of this discussion, one gets the idea possibly it's just the end of this day, the beginning of the new day. So is this whole point of creation the same? Does he have to recreate? And is the same darkness there? They're basically very similar. There's always, when you have the creation, you always have the big, the small, and in between. It's always there. So you have a big creation at the beginning, you have a big destruction at the end. Then between the cycles of the yugas, then you have partial dissolutions up to the earth, and at the end of his day up to his planet. So those partial destructions, then recreation in those areas that have been destroyed have to be done. But he won't be in darkness because his planet is not destroyed, only at the final dissolution. So the principle of creation and destruction is similar. It means you can even take it down to one of our days and nights. Because when we sleep, when you go into deep sleep, you know, there's no dreams, you actually, the soul merges back into the Lord. That's why it's refreshing, because you're in association with the Lord. And if you don't go to that deep sleep, you're not refreshed by your sleep, because you didn't have contact with the Lord. Then, as soon as we awake, then we remember everything here, and we come back here. So that goes on every one of our nights, or anything like that. So the principle is the same. That's what we're bringing out of this Purva Vap. Again, the principle is always the same. Whether it's our day and night, whether it's end of a four-yuga, maha-yuga, whether it's end of a kalpa, whether it's the end of Brahma's lifetime, the principle is the same. Like that. It always works from that, from the mind, from the false ego. That the combination of these two creates everything. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Because here it's the senses that are actually the working principle. It means living entity means senses. You cannot interact with someone else without using your senses. Right? You think about it. There's no interaction unless the senses are used. And so that's controlled by the mind. So what the mind is interested in, that's what gets what happens. And that is based on our false ego. So you change the ego, you change the method of the mind, you change what you do. So the senses actually aren't the problem. It's the mind and the ego that are the problem. The senses are just inert. They'll do anything you want them to do. Right? So the problem is the mind, due to false ego, has improper view. So then that needs to be corrected by changing the ego. When that's adjusted, then the mind will automatically adjust its values. So it will engage the senses, even though now it's even the same activities, but now the value is the Lord's pleasure than our own. And the Lord is the ability rather than we're the controller. That makes sense. So the principle, whatever it is, on the biggest or on the smallest, is always the same. It's consistent because it's Krishna. And Krishna is the same. He's male, so you can count on him to be steady. Right? It's not going to be one day one way and one day the next. No, it's the same. So the whole creation from Vrindavan right down to, you know, hell, it's consistent. It's based on the same principles that you can operate at any of those levels. The only difference is you have to change the consciousness. The higher the level, the higher the consciousness. But the principle in which it functions is exactly the same. It doesn't make any difference. I'll probably give the example of the rice husking machine. Whether it's in heaven or hell, it still husks rice. It doesn't change. Does that make sense? Like that. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Why are these partial recreations happening?
Why are the partial recreations happening? How do you say? In detail, there's a lot of variety of detail and living entities, but it's the same thing, so you have to redo them with a slight adjustment. You know what I'm saying? Let us say you go to a restaurant, right? Why do you go to that particular restaurant? Right? Because of some particular aspect of the atmosphere or the taste that you'll get from there. Otherwise, there's so many restaurants. Why do you go to this one? And on another night, you go to a different one for a change in the taste. But otherwise, the cooking method's the same. Eating's the same. You know, you sit down and you put things in your mouth. Everything's the same. But the taste is slightly different. So, therefore, then when we redo, then they can be put together in a slightly different flavor. Because the living entity, you have 8,400,000 species of life. So there's a lot of different flavors that have to be. The animals, you don't have to change much, but, you know, you do. You know, your dog, you know, here on the street, or your dog in the nice family here, your dog in heavenly planets, but you're still a dog. But there's some slight variation in taste, experience. That makes sense? So every day of Brahma is slightly different. It adjusts a little bit. The lotus itself has a slightly different color. And so it flavors that whole thousand Mahayugas. You know, but each Mahayuga will also have its own slight little flavor within that. Otherwise, how do you think we can keep Maya to keep us busy since time immemorial if there isn't that slight little adjustment? Right? Because if it was every time exactly the same in detail, it means principle is exactly the same, but detail it's slightly different. Right? Then there's enthusiasm. That's why it's said that the devotee has already tried everything, so he doesn't need to go back. He's tried everything and has understood that there's nothing in it. It means every aspect, whatever you could squeeze out of it, has already been endeavored for. And so now the devotee, basically what's left is not major, it's very minor, it's like fragrance. Right? You have some garbage in a room, you throw out the garbage, the room still smells. So that's what we're dealing with. We're not really dealing with the material attachment like the materialists are, because they seriously consider this as real. Well, the devotee knows it's not, but by habit he's still attached. Right? Does that make any sense?
So one other thing, Shlokasya mentioned that Brahma, that is Brahma's job to please the Lord by creating, so then that will be like the thing what he can do every day. So when he gets up, the first thing what he will do is his duty.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Which means here he's pointing out that his service to the Lord is to create. So then when he gets up in the morning, if there's not something to do, then how is he going to keep himself busy? Perception. Yes.
I've heard that if you want somebody to believe a lie, then we should put as much truth as possible into that lie.
Put as much?
Truth.
Oh.
And that will be able to produce it in small.
Mm-hmm.
But to believe. Huh. You think this is why maybe my body do not seem to be so
attractive?
Attractive.
Oh, okay. So, points being made then. If you want someone to believe in untruth, you put as much truth into it as possible. So is that why for the Mayavadis then it's attractive? Because there's so much truth in it. In one sense you could say yes, because the process of getting out of the material world is the same. The devotee getting out, or the impersonalist getting out, the technical, the metaphysical method is the same. You know, just like when you want to go to Calcutta, whether a devotee gets on the bus or a non-devotee gets on the bus, it follows the same route. The difference being, where the untruth is that they're leaving Krishna out of the equation in his personal feature. So, I guess you could say is that because it has so much elements of the truth of liberation, that's completely correct. Where they're making the mistake is that where that Brahman has come from. You know, and us as, you know, in other words, once you get to the eternal platform, that the differentiation between the soul and the supreme soul, that's missed. And that the supreme soul and the soul are one. So that element would be the untruth, but it's enough to poison the whole thing. I think probably as an example, put a drop of poison in a glass of milk, even though the volume of milk is nectar, it still acts like poison. So even though it may be majority is truth, because of that untruth, then the whole thing becomes poison. So one has to be very careful there. So it depends on your motive, right? Like sometimes you're trying to establish something by giving the truth, but some untruth may be there, but its purpose is proper, right? You know, like giving a child medicine, you may not say that, yeah, this is here, take this medicine, it's the most horrible, disgusting medicine I've ever tasted for years. You know, you don't say like that. So the truth is the endeavor to make the child come back to their natural healthy condition. So then some untruth may be used for perpetuating actual truth. But if here that process is used but their actual goal is not the real truth, then it becomes poison. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You said, Maharaj, there are slight differences between different creations, and as I read in the Bhagavatam, there it says 26 or 28 kind of creations. Does that mean that, like, I don't know, 26 creations later, that's going to be exactly the same people, I mean, bodies sitting here, but in different something?
Uh-huh. Question is that Bhagavatam mentions 26 different creations. So does that mean after the cycle of 26, are we looking at all the same bodies with just different, you know, like the names have been changed to protect the innocent, like that? Basically, but you're dealing with the karma that's there, but because people are moving through the same patterns, the modes of nature work in the same way, and they put you in the same 8,400,000 species of life, it is set what are the experiences and all that. That's the other fun, is we think we're very unique in how we look or dress or act or talk, but that's standard, that's set up by the modes. It means at other times, in Kali Yuga, you always have these kind of flavors, these kind of, you know, the natural thing of the kind of the direction of the behavior, because it's connected with your animals. Right? It'll be connected with all the different species of life, because an action will get you a result in a species of life. So there has to be activities that are conducive for that. So there has to be, it's a set formula. So it's a lot of variety, because you see, even within a species of life, there's a lot of variety. You know, someone has it, you know, the white spot on the nose, well, someone else has it on the back, someone else has it on the ear, someone on the tail, someone on the leg, someone on that leg, someone on the other leg, someone on the upper leg, you know, so like that, there's little something. But basically, but you don't have to worry if it's exactly, you know, but it doesn't matter. If it is or if it isn't, it doesn't matter. The point is that it's chewing the chewed. It means it has already been chewed. It means someone else already went through this. Right? It means you have these positions. You have Gotama and Jaimini and all that. These are positions. Every universe is always a Gotama and a Jaimini and all these different sages and Odalaka and Odalaki and all of them, they're always there. But the soul will be different. Indra, every 14 times in the day of Brahma, the Indra changes. But he's the same guy with the same 1,000 eyes. He does the same things. He has the same Urvasi dancing in the same court. Right? But there's 14 different souls sitting there. And that's in one day of Brahma. So I think there's something like 500,000 changes of all the, you know, Indra and Varuna and all the nature demigods in the lifetime of Brahma. I think Prabhupada says 504,000, something like that. Right? But it's the same. So, because Prabhupada explains that the living entity performs a sinful activity in this life, then he'll have done that in a particular situation, a particular body. Then, after leaving that body, he'll go to hell, he'll suffer there, then he'll come up through the specific, other forms of life, non-human forms of life. Then once he's done that, that means the reaction to his sin has been, accomplished. Now, it's a matter of the living entity will be put back in exactly the same position, with the same experiences, to see if they'll do it again. If you learned anything or you didn't. Does that make sense? So, you know, okay, maybe you wanted, you know, how you say, you know, the nose to be a touch different or this, that maybe it'll be different, maybe it'll be the same. But basically your situation is exactly the same, that you could have the same experience, the same desires, and make the same endeavors again to send yourself to exactly the same hell. You understand? So free will is always there, but that free will is tested in an environment that you wanted. You know? Like that. The living entity wants something, Krishna will, according to the karma, put them in that situation. Does that make sense? Anything else? How does one get to be a dog in the heavenly planets? I would probably be a combination of piety and some impious. Whatever it takes to be a dog. Generally, dogs, one of the elements, from what I've read, is indiscretion in sexual activities. inappropriate indiscretion. So then that, let's just say it was too early. Yeah. That will get you in the dog, but maybe they're very pious at the same time, so then they end up as a dog pair. But to the dog, there's not much difference. I think it was, one devotee asked Prabhupada once, he says, you have the dog here on the Ganges, eating all funky things down on the bank of the Ganga, and then you have this dog on the, upper west side on the 87th floor, the penthouse suite, eating off the table, the choicest things, dressed in his little sweater. And so how does that, the difference is so great in the dog's enjoyment. You probably pointed out to the dog, they see no difference. We say, oh, it's so much nicer, but the dog couldn't care less. You take that same dog off the 87th floor in his sweater and plunk him down to the Ganges, he'll be eating the same thing as the local dog. You take the local dog and put him there, he'll happily eat off the plate off your table. Right? So they don't care. But because you've done it, you deserve it. That's all. So you get it. Material nature is very just, right? So you always get what you deserve. So you deserve, you did the pious activity, you deserve to be in a nice garden, you will be in a nice garden. Just unfortunately happen to be a dog in a nice garden, but hey, you're in the garden. So it's like, cool. Okay? So we'll end here. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Gantaraj Bhagavatam ki Samadeha Bhaktabhinda ki Gantaraj Gantaraj
That's what I was thinking. Do they actually do that?
They're outside. Dogs are okay outside. Is everything else? It's all happening.
One thing I noticed about the dogs is that they don't chase cats. They're not very vicious. The Western dog goes ballistic when he sees a cat or a rabbit or one of these little squirrels. But they're very, very, very peaceful.
Yeah. I think it's also they have odors that are a little bit more outgoing. Because they don't have an odor, so they're very helpful. As soon as they have an odor, they'll try to warm. And generally, you see the normal thing is that they're very good, so the odor is good. No, the dogs here are very good.
Same way Mayapur within the compound there.
No, no, no. I'm talking about out of India. The Asian dogs.
They have to breathe in. They're not an actual dog. Actually, most of these dogs are German Shepherd, Pit Bulls, Rottweiler. They're inbred.
From all of these things. It
takes a lot of breathing to get a dog like that. They're not natural dogs.
But they're within the 8,000 It's because you can only, if you can't read it, then there's no sense.
That's another thing, a dog, would that be one species or will it be several within the 8 million forest? Just one?
I think a canine would be a category. So many varieties.
And that would be numbered in the 8 million forest, yeah. Not just one number. The forest, that. It's all very fascinating.
Inquiring about a reference you made to one lecture, a reference.
Oh, of course.
You mentioned one lecture I heard some time back about the one of the Polish classes, the Narodamas.
Right.
You said they were devotees in their last life.
No, devotees.
Yeah, devotional activities. And you mentioned it's an 11th canto or 6th canto.
Sixth
canto. Can you tell me where it's mentioned?
In the beginning chapters.
Beginning chapters.
Is that the Brahma, when he sleeps, when he wakes up in the morning, he forgets how to create. I haven't heard, so I don't know. So the Lord lives there with us. The thousand-armed, thousand-headed Vishnu lives with Brahma.
Oh, sir, when he falls asleep, he wakes up
I would expect. I mean, you wake up remembering what you did yesterday, so. He's got four heads. I'm sure one of them remembers something. How can we be on guard against impersonal clairvoyance? In ourself. Basically, you always have to consider the proper dealings with whatever other entity we're interacting with, whether it's animate or inanimate. Because it has a nature, so we have to accommodate that nature in the interaction. If we do, then it works nice. If we don't, it doesn't work nice. Does that make sense? Means you have a relationship with something, therefore you're interacting. If you interact properly, then the relationship works, both are enhanced. If you don't, then it doesn't work so good. Does that make sense? Because impersonal means you don't take into consider the other person. But the interesting thing is our impersonalism is still personal because it's concerning ourselves. Who's a person. So we behave in an impersonal way because we're impersonalists, but unfortunately the person that we're interested in is only ourselves. You know what I'm saying?
It's a responsibility to the other party.
It's a responsibility, yeah, to the other party, but it's a responsibility to the duties that are there between yourself and the other party. Right? Otherwise, how do you identify the other party? Right? How do you interact with that other party? Because the problem will come with the other party, will come in the interaction. Yeah, but there's a proper way to deal with it. Right? You have a glass, you can't drop it. You do it, breaks. You have a steel glass, you drop it, it won't break, but it dents. You know? So, like that. You know what I'm saying? There's a thing. A knife, you use a cut, when you cut onto wood, it stays nice. You cut onto stone, it doesn't stay nice. Cut onto steel, even less. I cut something on the wooden thing, it makes a mark on the wood, but that doesn't bother the wood. Right? No one has a problem with wood that has, you know, little fuzzy grooves in it. Right? But if your stainless steel plate that you eat off has all these lines across it, people will think it's not, it's an old plate. right? But if you have a cutting board that's nicely chopped up, I'll think, oh, it has some more value. It's not a new thing. It's well used. And then so in other words, if something is dealt with according to its nature, then it's always valued more. And if it's not, then its value goes down. So it's just a matter of understanding the other party and then what is your duties towards them. So it's not just the other party, because then that's a sentiment that you could try to manifest through anything that's still your idea. Right? Like here, you have a child, 12 years old, lost his father, no older brothers, it's only him with, you know, some younger sisters and an invalid mother. Okay? This boy at 12 wants to go out and get a job, make money, take care of his family. Right? But there's some people sitting on the other side of the planet that are legislating that he has to go to school. Right? So, they're thinking we're very personal, we care about this child. But they only care about the child according to their values, not according to duty. Right? Because they're not actually taking into consideration the child. Maybe most children who are employed, someone's exploiting them, but there are children who are employed because if they're not employed, they don't eat. But the legislation doesn't accommodate that. So, in other words, I've identified the other person, but I will deal with them simply based on what I want, how I want to deal. That's sentiment. And it's still impersonal. Right? Because it's not taking into consideration actually their nature and what is the proper thing for me to do to please their nature. Right? At the same time, what's appropriate for me and my nature to deal with them. That's complete. So there's no sentiment there. Sentiment may be the driving force behind it, but the actual application is not sentiment. Does that make sense? Otherwise, plenty of people are doing all kinds of nice things for other people according to what they think is good for them. You know, you have a culture somewhere, the people are living okay, and And they're quite happy and they don't kill each other and don't fight and all that. But they are affected by some local diseases and stuff like that. So you go in to help them with the local diseases. At the same time, you change their culture and eventually you just bring them into the Western culture. And then instead of being, you know, on the top of the pile in the jungle because they're the humans, now they're on the bottom of the pile because they're tribals living in the city. You know what I'm saying? And so all their bad qualities come out. So you could say, yes, we benefited them, we opened hospitals, we educated them and all that, but because they're simple, from a simple background, they don't do as well in the sophisticated Western culture, and so then they're always frustrated because they may generally be on the bottom. On their own thing, they were doing fine and perfectly happy. Just if you wanted to help them, you know, help them get rid of their sickness, but finish. But no, I put my values onto the whole thing. So how was I dealing with them in such a way that was actually beneficial for them? I can feel good, yes, I gave so much, I helped these people. Great, nice, you should give in charity. But in the long run, what was actually the help? What was the effect? So that's why it's sentiment's not enough. You know, the desire to interact, desire to do is good, that should be there, but it should be based on proper, you know, what is the correct thing to do. Does that make sense?
Yes, it's important to recognize your own limit.
Recognize your own limit, yes, but also recognize others' limit. It means that it's always balanced. You have your limit, but they have their limit. You know. Otherwise, you always end up with the modern thing of who's the victim. Because the victim can just do whatever they want and be completely, absolutely crazy and not taking anyone else into consideration. That means the victim is able to themselves be the perpetrator and make everybody else in society the victim. And it's their right. But that's not just. Someone has a problem, correct their problem, but they can't now impose their problem on everybody else. So all these solutions are all based on sentiment. They're not based on Guru Sat and Shastra. Therefore, the results they get simply make things more and more impersonal. Because they're not personal solutions. Right? But personal solutions don't jive well with our cut and dry concept of morality. Or, you know, social welfare or justice. Because if there's a gray zone, then that means there's consideration, means that my full emotional response that I want satisfied cannot be, because it can't be complete. You know, somebody did this to me, so they're taken and, you know, cut up with, you know, razor blades and then sent to a blender and then put out in the sun to dry and then powdered up and then spread all over, you know, the ocean, and then good, you've gotten rid of it. But because there was one quality there that was a consideration, that he was bad, but he was trying to take care of his mother, so there was this little element, so then maybe his mother should be considered in the equation. But that then is a problem for me, because it complicates things. I've got to use my brain, I have to have qualities, I have to have culture, I have to have forgiveness, you know, I have to have, you know, so much great list of qualities that I don't need if you just go in there and just, you know, pulverize and destroy and everything like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, no, it's complicated. That's what human life is. If you like something more simple, then try one of the other species. You know, they're a little more straightforward. You know, cat. Meow. Drink milk. Run after mice. Feel that you're the lord of all you survey. Have fleas. You know, what do you call it? Shed hair all over the place. And, Yeah. You know, and then, you know, Bob's drunk. So it's, hey. You know what I'm saying? Because then you only have to stick to eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That will come up anyway according to your inherent nature. And getting it done, there's no sin, so life's simple. But human beings, we have the element of choice, so therefore the music went the intelligence and that must be used. Why did Prabhupada put? Because the Westerners are impersonalists and voyeurists. Western culture is impersonal and void. It has nothing to do with the Vedas. Right? People are only interested in themselves. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. Yeah, because we're from that culture, so then. Yeah, it helps us to overcome.
Someone in the position of responsibility takes the reaction from the devotees. So how does that work for the devotees chanting the holy name?
How does that work for a devotee who's chanting the holy name?
It's
the same. The difference is he's chanting the holy name, so he's got some way to get rid of it. Point is, this reaction is there if there's impurity. If there's no impurity, it doesn't need to come. For the karmis, it comes despite, just because it's due to you. But the purpose of it is to reform the living entity. But if the living entity is reformed, then there's no need of the reaction. or even if it does come, the reaction won't bother them. You know, so it's not a worry whether it comes or doesn't come. The point is if you're unaffected by it, then what does it matter? Does that make sense?
Maharaj, I'm giving you this jealous view about the history of Prabhupada giving Brahman initiation to women.
The Prabhupada giving Brahman initiation to women.
And how to deal with those who criticize what Prabhupada has established in this manner.
Brahman initiation, what do you mean by Brahman initiation?
Yes.
Are you Brahman initiated? Okay. So, what do you mean by Brahman initiation?
I mean, I'm just giving the permission where to actually, you know, worship the deities.
Okay, well, that's Pancharatra. But I don't think there's any... If there is an argument on the Pancharatric level, then you're dealing with people who don't know anything that they're talking about. The question can only come up on the Vedic. You know what I'm saying? The Vedic mantra tradition is not given to the women, but Pancharatric is. That anybody can have. But the Vedic is not. Does that make sense? So, generally when we're talking to people, they don't understand that we're initiated into Bhagavat, Pancharatric, and Vedic mantras. So we actually have three initiations. But because technicalities aren't very popular, therefore this is not understood. And so you probably have a lot of people arguing over something that they actually know nothing about. Right? So we're talking about one out of seven mantras. Okay? So then, what's the big deal? The point is the Brahma Gayatri is there to reduce the masculine identity. You know what I'm saying? That's its purpose. That Purusha Bhava. So in the Vedic sense, then the women have much more the understanding that they're feminine. Right? They acknowledge and accept and are comfortable as females. Right? And they're comfortable for the men to ask as males. Right? Because then there's rasa, right? Viva la difference. Right? If there's a difference, then there's a taste. As you make them the same, there's no taste. Right? If your subject tastes the same as your sweet, is there any excitement? No, but because the subji and the sweet are so different in their appearance and their taste and textures, that's what makes it nice. Right? So as we make everything the same, there's less taste. But, you know, fools aren't known for doing the right thing. Right? So, now, predominance of the masculine identity in women means overtly. Previously it's covert. Now it's overt and it's, you know, and it's the right. So, therefore, then if they chant this Brahma Gayatri, it's not so much of a problem because hopefully it will bring them to the stage where they'll just act according to their natural condition of nature instead of putting an illusion on top of an illusion. So in one sense, it's okay that they chant the mantra because they actually need it more than the men, because they're in more illusion than the men, because they're women who are trying to be men. Right? So if you actually understand the purpose of the mantra, then what's the problem? Understand? There's a purpose. That's why the rules are set like that. And because the woman is chaste, therefore she will automatically get the benefit of the husband chanting the mantra. Or whoever she's under. If she's under the father, then she gets that. If it's under the son, she gets that. So they're always getting the benefit of the Brahma Gayatri, but it's coming from the men that they're connected to. But then that takes chastity. But nowadays they want to be independent of everybody, so they have to therefore take on the male duties and all that. And so then they come. So it's not a bad thing. But the ones that connect you to the deity, and that those are the Pancharatra, so that's a completely different thing. That's a completely different discussion. Right? So women can worship deities in the home, so they do that. You know, in most of our temples, it's actually set up, it's the temple, so you run the temple standards of cleanliness and all that, but the actual technicalities of it is home worship. And most temples do their worship as home worship. Like that. But in the big temples in India where people know, so Mayapur, Vrindavan, Bombay, those were established as temple worship, so therefore the ladies aren't involved. So it's a different thing. Because in the Pancharatra, the temples, the women aren't involved. Home, yes. Because that's what means something to them. It's possession, it's mine. Because you won't get a high standard of service out of a woman unless it's hers. So therefore you see where there is really good deity worship in the temples done by women, because the possessiveness is there. They're the head pujaris, they're there, and it's their thing. And you try to poke your nose in there, then you might as well go, you know, jump into a pit of cobras or something. Right? But if it's just, you just come in as somebody else's scene, you can come in and do this and leave, then you don't see the women around. They can't stick that out. The possession must be there to get an active endeavor from them. Right? So in the West it doesn't matter because no one notices or like that. But in India, they know the difference between being controlled by women and not. So that perception is there, they can understand the flavor. So those differences are there. Does that make sense? Because the home deity is their deity. But the temple deity is everybody's deity. You know, and then you get jealousy, well, why that one got to do and this one got to do and I didn't get to do and I'm better than her and that. Or I dress it is that, you know, everybody's got to notice and this and that, and if they don't notice then I'm not doing anything. So, you know, the whole idea is that you miss out on all that kind of stuff. Because it's, the women are not actually comfortable there. They may say they are, but you would have to prove it, because I don't believe it. Because unless they're the head of the jars, they run the show, it's all women, and then the men are in there to do the jobs they don't want to do, you know, the heavy cleaning, the heavy moving, you know, stuff like that. You'll see in Temple Square, the women run the pujari part, that's all the men do. You know, that's what they do. But in Temple Square, men run the puja, you don't really see women involved, because they can't get absolute control of it. Because that's how it works. That's the reality. And that's not a problem. Right? Because if you don't have a woman like that, then how will the man be an actual man? And so therefore, how is the taste of male-female relationships going to be accomplished? Right? So it's not a problem. It's just there are certain specific key areas that it is a problem. So in the Vedic tradition, they're avoided there. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? You have a disease. If you take the medicine, it gets rid of the disease. If you don't have the disease and you take the medicine, then it creates a bad reaction. Right? So if the women have a very minimal Purusha Bhav, means it's Purusha according to the feminine, but if it's there, then by chanting that mantra, it may not be good for them, because it will create Purusha Bhav. But if you have it, it will destroy it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that.
Is Brahma Gayatri only important for temple worship?
Brahma Gayatri has nothing to do with temple worship. Temple worship is Pancharatra. Brahma Gayatri is important for liberation. You know, which is the masculine thing anyway. So basically speaking, when you have this argument over this, probably both parties don't know what they're talking about. You know, each head has one point from here and there in the argument, but you know, they don't know actually what the purpose is. Anything else? Okay, so then we'll end here. Sorry. Prabhupada ki, Sarvabhava ki.